This time of year, you're going to find me jigging for crappies off my father-in-law's boat, celebrating a successful turkey hunt, or just sitting on the back deck watching time go by with a quality cigar from Thompson Cigar. Thompson Cigar has been around since 1915, offering the widest array of cigars and cigar accessories at very affordable prices. Thompson Cigar offers your favorite brands like Swisher Sweets, Cohiba, Backwoods, and Monte Cristo shipped fresh directly to your door. Also, be sure to check out their 5-pack fever deals and join their value club for big savings. Visit thompsoncigar.com and enter the discount code SE at checkout for 20% off of all orders over $75. Thompson Cigar, quality cigars at affordable prices. Bow hunters are some of the hardest working hunters there are. Most of us work hard all year long just to get a couple weekends or burn our vacation time to sit in a tree. And just like the American blue-collar worker, we're trying to balance work, family, faith, and a little time for ourselves in the great outdoors. Now let me introduce you to Trollco Clothing, a brand built by blue-collar workers for blue-collar workers. Workwear, comfortable tees, hoodies and hats for both men and women, Trollco represents the hardworking American. So whether you're operating heavy equipment, wrenching on engines, or in a factory living that shift life, Trollco has your back, literally. Head to trollco.com/hunting. That's trollco.com/hunting and enter the discount code Empire25 for 25% off of your first order. Trollco, for the hardworking American. You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm-fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.
Close your eyes, exhale, feel your body relax, and let go of whatever you're carrying today.
Well, I'm letting go of the worry that I wouldn't get my new contacts in time for this class. I got them delivered free from 1-800-CONTACTS. Oh my gosh, they're so fast.
And breathe.
Oh, sorry. I almost couldn't breathe when I saw the discount they gave me on my first order. Oh, sorry. Namaste.
Visit 1-800-CONTACTS.com today to save on your first order.
1-800-CONTACTS.
This episode of the Sportsman's Nation is brought to you by Outdoor Edge and their complete lineup of replaceable blade knives, fixed blade knives, and game processing kits. Now, we've all been there before, trying to field dress your wild game with a dull knife. This is where Outdoor Edge really steps in. With the Razor Safe system, you can have a brand new razor sharp blade with just the push of a button. No more dull blades and no more problems processing your wild game. To check out all of the products from Outdoor Edge, visit OutdoorEdge.com. And at checkout, enter the discount code NATION30. That's NATION30 for 30% off of your purchase.
Welcome to the Land and Legacy Podcast. We're your hosts, Adam Keith.
And Matt Dye.
This is your number one resource for all things land.
If you're interested in conservation, habitat management, hunting strategy, and rural real estate, this is the podcast for you.
All right, guys, welcome back to another Land and Legacy Podcast. Sitting up here in northern Missouri on this one.
It's a beautiful setting.
Yeah.
On the first night of the the NDA Habitat Module.
I do it every time. So.
I mean, that's just so
the
ingrained.
QDM ..
Yeah.
NDA.
Yeah. Just new name. Name change again. That's fine. But yeah, at the Habitat Module at Mr. Mike Hinkle's property, who's joining us today on the podcast.
Thanks for having me.
Man, yeah. Thanks for having us up here because we're enjoying a beautiful night looking over the farm. It's actually cooled off and pretty pleasant.
Yeah, it's nice now.
Very nice. Not so much earlier today.
Nope. But at least it was. It could have been much worse.
Yes. Could have been much, much worse.
Now, Mike, we met Mike the very first year
of
2017.
Legacy,
we met him at QDMA.
What was QDMA? Now NDA.
National Convention.
New Orleans.
Nolans. Mm-hmm. And you were there. And
I saw your first official
presentation.
Yeah.
Presentation, if you want to call it that. Yeah.
All right. For those who don't know, there was an internet issue with the presentation that we'll never do again. But we winged it. I mean, we shot from the hip really well.
He hired us.
I hired you. You impressed me enough that
these guys can shoot from the hip in front of, I don't know, 100 and some people.
Yes.
You know, we were...
One-on-one ought to be a little bit better.
Yeah. So that was a good time. And we visited with you on this property that September or October.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it looked a lot different back then. You had acres and acres of tillable.
Right.
And then you converted it now into a Bob White specific what program?
CP38.
Which is a CRP blend for those listening.
Yep. And so converted a lot of the property to that. We'll probably cover it on another podcast. We need to, because you've got an awesome story going on here.
Oh, yeah.
But we're going to do a podcast just as we wrap up tonight. We wrap up the first day of the Habitat module, and we cover, you know, things we covered today. Go figure. A lot of bedding thicket stuff.
A lot of timber work, a lot of prescribed fire, a lot of edge feathering. And essentially at the end of the weekend, hopefully everyone here in attendance is going to have a full understanding of how to look at a hunting property critically and evaluate it from start to finish. Is this good? Is this bad? What do I need to change? And then how do I change it?
That's right.
So that's the goal.
And, you know, how do I change it to where it's not a 15-year program? It's a 5-year program to where I can ultimately in 5 years maybe let off the gas a little bit and start to coast and enjoy it rather than think that I'm going to be working and working and working 15 years from now with the same workload. So Mike, tell us a little bit about the property when you first bought it to then when we visited with you. You were really going into a new direction, and then fast forward to today.
Right, so I was at the time living in Los Angeles, and I wanted to spend more time in the outdoors, and I had Midwest roots, and I grew up in that environment, and I wanted my children to be able to enjoy that. So I searched out some property that provided decent hunting, what I thought would be decent hunting, and decent values. And so I settled on this area through a couple searches, and my focus was a hunting property, and then ended up my focus changed to not just hunting but enjoying habitat work, having my family involved in that, seeing the benefits of it. And so I bought a couple hundred acres, and over the last 10 years I've been able to expand it to 400 through neighbors selling out, and it's been a great experience. And one of the things that helped me that when I went to QDMA National Convention and did Deer Steward, I thought I was the only guy that didn't know what to do. And I realized a lot of people were exactly like me.
Yeah.
And so it was comforting to share stories and hear about other people's visions and what they've done. And so it was inspiring and gave me confidence, not growing up on a farm or knowing anything about how to do a food plot or run a chainsaw or even what it meant, what the effect would be of a chainsaw. I thought you could use a chainsaw to make firewood. So networking with people and folks like yourself have helped me to really appreciate this land for more than just hunting. I love to hunt, but I love spending time out here and doing habitat work and enjoying it with my family and my friends. And I'm reaping some of the benefits of the time that I spend together. I've been fortunate to harvest some good animals, but I've been more fortunate to spend time with my family and my grandkids, to experience that with me. And that's been That's been awesome.
This isn't your first time on the podcast, right? Didn't you interview him? I can't remember.
Yes.
That's what I thought.
Yeah, okay.
It's so hard for me. I have the memory of a gnat when it comes to just like day in, day out stuff. Like I can remember stuff like cutting places. I can remember property. Farms I visited in 2017. Exactly how to get there, never plugging in GPS. But like the podcast, people will tell us the next week or email in. It's like, so on that podcast, you said this. And I'm like, good luck. I don't even remember what we said.
You have
on
to send me that number of podcasts. I don't recall. Yeah.
So. You had talked to me about, you had helped me lay out the design for this.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
And I had harvested a decent buck and you wanted the story, but I wanted to tell you about my best hunt that I had, and it was a doe.
Yeah.
Oh, that's right, with your grandchildren.
Right, and I had my 6, 4, and 2-year-old grandchildren with me, and it was chaos, but it was awesome. And they were more excited than I was, and just that was like the light bulb moment for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So this was that was like, this is what it's about.
Yeah. Yeah. That's so awesome. Now, go ahead.
I was going to say, another cool aspect about the whole weekend is, one, your generosity to be able to open up your place to showcase what it is you've done, the workload and the improvements that people can visually see, right? We've got attendees from across the country here enjoying this place, but in addition to that, Todd Williams, you've been pretty quiet over there, is on the podcast as well, and he's with OnX. And so your involvement with OnX and OnX's, let's say, just sponsoring of the event and being a part of it has also helped, let's say, that learning aspect of taking habitat, using technology to improve it, our efficiency on the landscape. So, you know, between your involvement here, your involvement and company's involvement, it's really cool just to see how all these people can come together on a property in random Missouri, right? And just like-minded landowners and passionate people enjoying natural resource management.
Yeah, absolutely. It's been fun to be a part of OnX. Just from the technology standpoint, land stewardship in general has a near and dear place in my heart, and that was a big part of the reason that I came to work at OnX,
mm-hmm.
was to be able to help communicate how whitetail hunters think about land, how we think about the culture of hunting and family and what that looks like. And
yeah,
it's neat to be able to take technology and use that as a platform to communicate about land management.
Absolutely. No, and there's so many different tools that now are available to folks in the form of app, desktop usage. I mean, the list goes on and on of the capabilities, but it's cool to be able to share that, because in our line of work, we are able to share and communicate using the app how to go and improve a property.
Right. It provides a visual. So you can talk to people all day long on a map on a piece of paper, but when you're able to put something in on somebody's desktop or in the palm of their hands, that they can literally manipulate the shapes, that they can see that specific areas as they lay out on a property, that the ways that we want to manage those individual pieces of property, it really brings a property to life.
What do you think some of the most common uses for your everyday user is? Like, how do they utilize your app?
Right. Well, as Mike was talking about, a lot of folks use our app to begin with for landowner names and boundaries when they're looking for property to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You guys have definitely made me rethink what I'm going to name my farm.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm. In the assessor's office, because it's like,
I don't know if I want my last name popping up on that property.
No kidding.
Exactly.
We're forming an LLC.
That's right.
Of a name nobody knows.
Yeah. That's it. Be slightly removed from that process just a little bit.
Pink Daisy's Farm.
Yeah.
Yep. And that's it's just one of the first places that people come to OnX, you know, for that. That's the first thing that an uncle or a friend has told them about is, you know, hey, did you know that I know exactly where you live and I know who your neighbors are? And it starts that conversation, and that ends up moving over time to doing things like the former QDMA, now NDA, mm-hmm. does with building cooperatives. It's a great way to be able to meet landowners even before you buy a property.
Sure.
To see what potentially folks, what kind of QDM practices are going on in a general area. And then, you know, from that point, you can begin to use the features to, if you're trying to figure out how many acres of timber, how many acres of grasslands are on a place before you even buy it, because you want a certain mix before you even purchase a place.
Yeah.
It's a great way to use the app in research mm-hmm. before you ever get there.
Well, without a doubt. Without a doubt. It's
I asked that question because I think the most common forms that I see guys using is like, okay, I'm going to highlight my food plot so mm-hmm. I know what the acreage is. I'm going to highlight my roads.
Yep.
And I think of some of the ways that we utilize the map, and it's probably a lot different than what you know, the way I use it day in, day out on clients' properties is tracing, turning on the tracker and tracing out the roadway. So then when it turns time to build the map, I just overlay and boom, there it is. Another way that I use it, and I'll talk about this tomorrow with people, is I should say we are not in any kind of agreement. So it's not like I'm telling you something that you're like, oh, yeah, he's bought and paid for to say this. But I use it a lot in the old field management style where we're removing invasives or removing a cool season grass, and I'm weaving in and out trying to even pay attention where I'm spraying, and I can look at the tracker and be like, okay, these areas have all been covered. Or like we use
TSI
it in
units.
Doing TSI, and it's like, you turn your tracker on, I'll turn mine on, you turn yours on. Then when we get done, you all share it with me, and we can see, okay, these are all the areas that have been TSI'd. And over time,
well,
we turn that whole polygon blue.
Right.
Yeah,
and we've addressed every acre strategically throughout something that, you know, you take 15, 25, 40 acres, and you can see that progress develop on a screen. Where if you don't have that, sometimes it's like daunting. Right. Well, how much did I really accomplish? Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's kind of that visual aspect of like, okay, actually I got a third done today. It didn't feel like a third. But I really got a whole third of this 40-acre
unit.
Or
it can be the exact opposite. It's like, oh, well, I felt like I worked myself like a dog, and I only TSI'd 2 acres.
Yeah.
Oh, geez, I got to hire some
help. I don't
want to
see that timber. You only got through 2 acres in a day.
Yeah.
Woo! No.
We got Dan Johnson over here running a chainsaw.
That Poland special. Sorry, Dan. Yeah. No, it's a fantastic tool to be able to, you know, visually learn, and then I use it, so you use it a lot for that, but communicating with landowners of, hey, I recommend starting this unit first. Here's the priority, and we'll send them to you, you know, descending order, and add notes into the units themselves and say, you know, when I was on site, I saw X, be careful, make sure you're addressing this in a follow-up, you know, herbicide application, you know, can leave those little hints that take that fine-tuning and just tweak it just a little bit. That's so right. They don't forget those details.
That's right. We've seen a lot of folks that we use them along those lines, because you can leave notes when you put a shape on the map. You mm-hmm. can click on that shape, add notes to that, and so people will use it year after year from a management standpoint. So whether it's I'm putting in the number of acres of seed for this particular food plot, the amount of lime that I need to apply, the amount of fertilizer.
I burned this in spring of 2012 and then 2016.
You got a clear record of when you need to come back and start that process again and apply fire or whatever management practice you want in that particular area.
Even like in this weekend's event, building out, let's say, all the workload and whatever, all the units that you guys have access to, I'm saying to the people listening, there's notes sections in there of, hey, remember this from this site, because we're going to see that and it's important. So just in all the files that were shared, there's a paragraph worth of notes in each section and each polygon that was shared with everyone.
Right. It was super helpful for me even coming over here to kind of know what direction you guys were headed. Mm-hmm. And so the time that y'all took and the attention to detail to say this has been the process in this particular area that we've marked off, this is what we've done in the past, it gave all of us a clear picture of kind of be able to see in our minds even what was happening before, what happened in the more recent past, and then even what things need to happen as we walk through a property.
Kind of that like past, present, future of each site.
That's
and
right. That's
that
right.
Record, I mean, as many places we're fortunate to see, or Mike, as many places as you have gone in and cut, it's kind of hard to keep track of like, well, was I there in 14 or 13? I know it was cold or it was hot.
Right.
So it was, which year was it?
Sure.
All that really makes a difference when we're going back and managing that unit with fire, herbicide, or more thinning. That finite detail is
that's right.
Super
and to move
critical.
It even in a more sentimental direction, the opportunity to drop waypoints, then to be able to add pictures inside those waypoints. So when you've had those great hunts with a 6-4 and 2-year-old grandchild in the stand, and you want to be able to flip back the next time you're in the stand with those folks and say, this is what we harvested, or you took pictures from the stand of deer you were seeing. These are pictures that we have from that day when we were here together. We found that to be a great way for families to spend time together in the field, reminiscing in a very kind of practical way.
I know I don't think this is incriminating myself. You remember how we used
it
on X this spring with that turkey hunt? Is Chad had like,
I think
the birds roosted right here.
Yeah.
He dropped a pin. Yeah, that's what he's saying. You're using electronics. We have people.
That was not
back.
During the hunt, though.
No. Yeah, that was.
It was
he roosted the bird.
Of, yeah.
Put it on a to like pinned it and was like, I think he's right there. Dink, and then he came back to camp and he showed us. He's like, he's right here. And I'm like, okay, yeah, that. I mean, or we think that's in that area.
Mm-hmm.
The way the turkey worked that morning was like, okay, he's somewhere down that slope, 200 yards, we think. And then the first bird to gobble was across the valley, and I was
and
like,
the same line of sight, but just across the valley, like
we're
kind of 800
Matt
yards.
Kind of like looked at each other, like, was he what? How did he miss it that bad? Like, yeah. That bird is 200 yards
right,
that way.
Just hold tight.
Easy.
Yeah, and then all of a sudden, he finally gobbled, and that bird was a friend of ours, shot it at 5:55, like, way earlier.
Right off the
6
limb,
o'clock,
right down the skitter trail. I was like, okay, yeah, he pretty much pinned him.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, it's a pretty common story, and you hear that with turkey hunting a lot. Where you don't hear that a lot as well, there was a 165 that I saw over on this particular food plot, and then that pin gets shared. That's the part we don't
see.
Yeah, yeah. We don't see that nearly as often.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's understandable.
You know, and speaking of using it today, like the first part this afternoon is the way we worked through the property. We did the classroom session, and then we went out in the field is like trying to showcase a cut, the bedding area, temporary forest opening that was done 2 years ago, three years ago, then burned. And then looking at another area that had been done 8 years ago that hadn't been burned, and kind of the progression. But the one thing we did find, and this is why Matt and I may not get to see this farm anymore in the future, is that we found a lot more work for Mike, yourself, to do.
Yeah, that's okay, though. I mean, it's a journey.
Could you be, I mean, imagine if you ran out of products. Do you know how upset you'd be? If you're like, well, I guess I'm just going to go up there and sit in the cabin. What fun would that be?
Well, typically what we see when the workload kind of drops down is then you get into the work that's a little detrimental. It's like, well, I did all that. Maybe I'll just go bush hog now.
Yeah.
It's like, no.
Get off the tractor.
But no, we found that spot when we were walking out. I was like, ooh, this makes a really good spot right here for another bedding cut,
mm-hmm.
another temporary forest opening that really makes that side of the farm even better.
Well, it helps you. It helps me to when I'm looking at projects that are overlaid on a map, and am I balancing out my workload?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Am I maximizing my opportunities for my property? And rather than just eyeballing it,
yeah,
it gives me a priority and helps me to balance that work and
yeah.
that cover and whatever work I'm doing to try to, otherwise I can get stuck in, well, I got to work on this invasive species and then I miss out on other opportunities that are even more important.
Yeah, totally. I noticed that like we run across some landowners that are like, this is my favorite area and that's where they do all the work. And it's like, 3/4 of the farm doesn't get nearly as much work.
How much love and
attention. No wonder you like this spot so much because that's where all the wildlife are. Mm. And so, you know, that's a great point of looking at it going, okay, like when we suggest bedding cuts to landowners, it's like, don't just like start knocking them out one after another, kind of domino effect. Do one in the southeast, then go to the northwest, then go to the central part, then go down to where it's just like every part of the farm eventually is more improved rather than just the south end's good, but by year 3, the north end's finally catching up.
Or you look at it in comparison to your neighbors.
Yeah.
Because you can see that level of detail.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And you can say, boy, this is going to work pretty good because I'm going to have the only bedding cover yeah. for a pretty long way.
Yeah.
For sure.
And
that's right.
That's going to work to my advantage.
Yeah. Yeah.
Another cool thing I guess we don't talk a lot about because it's not like this general rule of thumb that says, okay, you have to be this distance away, but when you have these shapes overlaid on an aerial, you can then use another portion of the app that says, okay, what's the line distance here from this feature to that? Like, how far off that gravel road am I from the edge of that bedding cut? Oh, I've got 120 yards. I can easily slip in and push the envelope, whereas I could measure and say, well, actually, there's only 80 yards. That's getting a little tight,
a little
right?
than we want to be.
So you can get that spatial aspect of, you know, really the finite detail there too to say, all right, actually I might slide this cut or this TSI unit, maybe 40 or more yards that way. That'll give me enough cushion and room to go around to. So, I mean, you can lay out the features and then do it, I want to say mathematically, because that's not the way nature works, right? But you can still be like, all right, I'm comfortable getting in there and hunting because the access is critical.
Because that is a huge part of it. But depending on whether you're setting bedding area is great. But if you can't access that bedding area to be able to hunt it because you haven't laid it out right to begin with, your stand needs to end up being on the predominant side where deer are going to travel depending on time of day, and you can't access that particular area, you've really not helped yourself much at all. In fact, you potentially could actually hurt deer movement, because the whole reason we manage these properties is obviously for the quality of the wildlife that's there, but it's also to harvest them.
Yeah. Reap the benefits.
That's right.
He said that with a smirk on his face.
Like, he said it with a smirk on his
saying
face.
It out, like in a,
yeah. I've killed a few deer before.
Yeah.
And I enjoyed it.
Yeah. And it was fun. Yeah.
And they tasted great.
Yeah.
And I intend to do it again.
Very soon. Full intention, full disclosure.
Yeah.
I'll be at it again this fall.
Yeah. That's cool. Yeah, right. Lord willing.
Oh, gosh. Yeah. No, and so, you know, today's been enjoyable to really kind of help land, or I assume everybody here is a landowner, but help them kind of see spatially how to utilize mapping from a standpoint of like, yeah, every one of us have looked at a bajillion maps probably and aerial images, but we probably hit analysis paralysis and going, should I do bedding here? No, maybe I'll do it here. No, maybe I'll do it there. No, it's like, no, we're going to take what we know is good. We're going to use these little terrain features, like the first stop we did. This is a phenomenal spot for deer to bed based on terrain. Now let's enhance it. And then, oh, by the way, guys, pull out your map. Let's look at this. Oh, it's only 75 yards up there to the food plot.
Mm-hmm.
Now we're really getting somewhere, and we're solving one of the biggest issues of nighttime deer activity.
Yep.
And so, yeah, hopefully people are learning that. And like I said, in the field, it's like, if people don't leave this thinking about dragging the chainsaw out and making sure it still runs or sharpening it up to get ready, we've failed for a day and a half. Like, I don't know how much more I can talk about the importance of cutting and bedding and managing a forest, and because that's how much we believe in it. And
yeah, and managing the other aspects of the farm too, of smooth brome removal, managing the CRP maybe at a different rotation or decrease in burn unit sizes and edge feathering. But man, it just, when you do all the work, the property itself comes to life, but you can almost plan that out on a map.
That's
and
right.
you can add and delete these areas and say, okay, well, no, I do need to shift it over here. But I put it on there. It didn't make sense. I'm totally deleting it. But you can preemptively see a property come to life when you have the ability to add shape files.
That's right.
Add roads and all these cool features on a map like that.
Have you had anybody complain about the space? Like, as in, you can only have so many polygons or so many lines?
In what sense? Like complaining to what end?
In using the app. Like, I have reached a point where it's telling me I have too many polygons.
Right.
That's how much I used it. And, like, right. If I show you... I mean,
we're not the common user of the app, though.
No,
there are power users, and then there's land and legacy.
I mean, I'm like,
I make polygons in my sleep.
That's right. I don't know if Onyx was ready for land and legacy. Like that was a step up as far as
I wondered, because like each one of those red dots and farms I've been has polygons and shapes, and I mean, for the people to see, it's like that's where I've traveled.
Good thing it's not a joint account, because
oh, it'd have been
because that's the ones that you've traveled. I have the same thing on mine. It's like if you combined those
in the last
be
2.5
them.
Years, I don't even have a polygon for Mike's place when we were here in 2017.
Right.
So like, I mean that just like
well, and those are the only times I ever get those kinds of questions are from guys like you that are professional land managers who have a certain cache of work that they've done over a number of years, or we work with some kind of larger, like corporate landowners,
mm-hmm. yeah.
like Rainier Hunting Properties mm-hmm. for one, and like so some of their biologists, they have 2.4 million acres that they manage, and so they have a ton of shape files, and they use it on a regular basis from a work standpoint.
Is that big?
How do they process through
million?
Stuff? It's bigger than my place. A little.
I think I have one property to tie up, and I'll be getting there.
Right.
Yeah.
We're actually closing next week.
Almost
no
there.
Almost. Yeah.
But those guys, you know, they use it a ton. Their biologists use it a ton. There are other folks in their company that use it for various reasons. And so they drop similar, maybe not as much as y'all, but
well, that's
similar.
That's a really cool aspect of it, though.
Makes
like,
me
you could,
feel accomplished yeah. that somebody on 2.4 million still hasn't quite caught me.
It's really neat that, let's say, a corporate company mm-hmm. and a business, as well as an individual landowner,
right.
The app is set up feature-wise and usability-wise that everyone can benefit from it.
That's right.
It doesn't matter who you are. It doesn't single anybody out. There's application for each and every person who wants to utilize land itself.
That's right. And when you consider like the size of, without getting into the details of exactly how many employees we have and that
yeah.
sort of thing, but we have more employees in certain segments of our company than other people who do similar work to us.
Yeah.
Literally having their whole company, we might have more people in our customer service department, for instance,
mm-hmm.
or more people, more engineers than other competitors might have in their entire companies. But the reason for that is because one of our major tenets is our number one tenet is customer first. And so literally everything that we do flows out of and stems out of that. And a lot of companies will say that, but I can truly say after the time that I've spent with Onyx that that is a value that they not only talk about, but they put money and resources behind.
Right.
And it's a great opportunity to get to work with a company that really does prioritize the customer's experience from an individual landowner all the way to a corporate landowner.
Awesome. Now, how long have you been at Onyx?
Going on 3 years.
Gotcha.
Yep.
So I know every conversation we've had for probably 3 years
mm-hmm.
has been, how can we improve the product?
That's right.
And because I've always been like, do this. But I realized
I got ideas flowing out of me.
That's right.
Yeah. You know what you need to do? Yeah. You need to make this.
I'm going
to
tell
yeah,
you how to
I'm
do your job.
I'm that guy. Yeah,
right.
I'm that
right.
guy. It's like, hey, if you can make this, it was to make my job a lot easier.
That's right.
And so, yeah, you know, that's great because I've got that experience even just in dealing with you is that you guys are trying to make the product better for the customer.
That's right. It's just a matter of prioritization. It's not really a matter of a shortage of great ideas.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a matter of which one is going to benefit customers the most. And
if
it doesn't fall into that category, then it gets
kind
deprioritized.
Of like habitat management.
Personally, the unfortunate thing for Onyx is that this is where my heart is. Like this mm-hmm. is what I love. This is what gets me up in the morning. And so they hear habitat management from me and how do we build the app around the ability to manage habitat, not just from whitetails, though that's near and dear to my
mm-hmm.
heart, but there are a ton of other uses. Anytime we're talking about how do we manage, you know, native grass, how do we manage moist soil units, how do we do timber stand improvements, we're not looking at just whitetails. We're looking at all of the additional benefits that can come from that, whether you're doing quail management or turkey management or whatever the case may be. But they do get to hear a lot about land management from this part of the world.
When you're saying something about the ideas, or there's no shortage of them, but some of them have to go to the wayside, it's like, that's all my ideas.
Well, that's the problem. It's like, you know, it's a good and bad thing, right? Because if there were as many of you guys doing what you do, then the competition is that much more difficult for y'all.
Yeah.
Then it would get highly prioritized because there would be that many more customers. So
totally.
It's actually a good thing.
But I'd say bring it on. Let's do it.
That's right. Y'all ready?
More acres conserved.
Yeah.
Competition makes us stronger.
That's right.
Yeah.
No doubt.
Yeah. I there's so many things about this weekend that are great, but I think at the end of it, I just enjoy getting to meet the people and helping them. I mean, we've kind of came together in this,
mm-hmm.
and you guys have helped, or I guess sponsor this event with National Deer Association, where you're bringing something, we're bringing something, and hopefully at the end, a landowner is leaving with the knowledge to go improve their property in a quicker, more affordable way.
And more effective. Right?
And more effective.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Then to share that experience with others.
That's exactly right, because at the end of the day, there's not a lot of point in conservation if folks aren't able to enjoy it. And so, you know, being a Western-based company, you know, we talk a lot about access and public land and those
mm-hmm.
kinds of things, and that's super important, something we need to focus on. But at the end of the day, access has lots of different, you know, fronts, and one big part of that is his family and friends, and
totally
being able to provide access at a private landowner level is incredible.
Yeah, and with that note, I'm gonna hand it over and see what kind of questions we may get from some of the people sitting behind us. There's an audience.
This is a live studio audience.
That's
it is. Yeah, that's cool.
And the best sound coming out of that is the red-winged blackbird that's been chirping.
Yeah, hear it.
But yeah, let's hear some questions. Does anybody have any questions about all today that want to sit down and ask a few? Nope, they're all acting bashful.
They're all
so
being quiet.
Anyway, I'm excited for tomorrow. I appreciate you, Todd, for making the trip all the way up from
totally.
Mississippi.
Yeah, super
and
glad to be
here. Mike, man, can't thank you enough. It's been a fun 4 years.
Yeah.
And you're kind of a one-man band up here, but you sure get a lot of stuff done.
Well, these kind of events help you build confidence on what you can do, because it can be overwhelming to think, gosh, I can't do that.
Yeah.
And the technology that's available today versus when I started 10 years ago, I mean, it wouldn't take me 10 years.
Yeah.
That's available.
Mm-hmm. You know that old joke that was like, are you a doctor? No, but I did stay at a Holiday Inn Express last night.
Yeah.
I was thinking of that today as like, are you a botanist? Nope, but I have the iNaturalist app.
Yeah. Are you a land manager? Nope, but I have the OnX app.
Yeah. Do you know what to do with invasive? Well, that's not a good reference. Do you know how to plant a food plot? Nope, but I have a YouTube account.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
I can figure this stuff out. But, you know, thank you again for the generosity, hospitality of having everybody up here to showcase, one, just a beautiful place, beautiful setting, but what works.
Yeah.
I mean, the place is transformed, and you're seeing some awesome results. You're reaping the rewards, but most importantly, you're able to share it with us, the attendees, and your family, and create those amazing memories.
Look at what's the point of having it if you can't share it?
Yeah, I love it.
Because there's really no benefit of just you having it yourself.
Right.
Yeah. It's being able to share and being able to maybe it gives you pride to be able to say, hey, I tried this and it worked.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And you should try it too.
Let me tell you my story, then you tell me yours. And
what has been your favorite project in the last, since you bought the place? What's been the thing that you've done that you're like, oh, I love that?
I would say changing this from a production farm to a wildlife focused.
Yeah.
And then taking specific projects.
Yeah.
So I won't say there's one, but I used to be scared of a chainsaw.
Yeah.
Now I carry two.
Yeah.
One on each hip.
When I get one
I got one for each of you.
So when I get one stuck, I can get it out.
And I got four chains in the UTV.
But I mean,
just
as an example, I've built confidence I'm a office guy.
Yeah.
And now I was an office guy.
Oh.
Said you were from L.A., you weren't like a rancher in L.A., huh?
No, I wasn't a rancher. I was a commuter like the other 20 million people. But, my grandpa had a farm, but it was small farm, and he had a cow, and we didn't do anything for wildlife. And so I learned everything, and I'm not to say that I know everything, but the things I've learned how to do has been through people like Landon Legacy, YouTube, technology tools like OnX and other things, that it's just amazing how you can now not really have a background and you can really get up to speed quick.
Yeah, for sure.
And that's the most enjoyable thing about having a hunting property, is being able to see it evolve and really kind of seeing that you have a little bit of a footprint in what can happen with that landscape.
What we would call you is a producer. Like, you're a producer. You're not just a consumer of northern Missouri and its habitat and the wildlife. You're out here producing it.
Yeah. You're producing turkeys for the neighborhood. We hope.
We'll find out.
You know, the MDC partnering with Missouri Department of Conservation, partner with National Wild Turkey Federation, grant from the University of Missouri or something. I totally could have butchered that third one, but that sounds right. The guy's shaking his head over here. He clearly paid attention when I was not.
More so than Adam.
But they're doing a research project on nesting hens and then trying to radio collar poults. Right. And that's actually happening right here on this. So hopefully we'll be able to share some of that data that they're collecting this spring and for the next three years of what's happening up here. So
yeah, and hopefully, you know, other landowners and the landscape benefit from that research. And I'm proud to be able to participate in that.
Yeah.
Just as a landowner.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it gives you pride in achieving something. So a lot of the pride that I used to get in the business world, I get so much more in this.
Yeah.
So, because I can see my specific impact.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's just more enjoyable.
Yeah. Cool. Well, guys, that'll pretty well wrap up this podcast.
Yep.
We thank you guys for listening. We're going to wrap it up and get back after it tomorrow and right here for the
a full hot day.
NDA, National Deer Association Habitat Module, sponsored by
Onyx.
Appreciate it,
guys. We'll see ya.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.